You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 366. Welcome to Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam Wood. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, two individuals out of... Are we still trying to keep you from triangulating your location, John?
Yes, we are.
All right, out of
America. You can say Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Well, can I get that specific?
You can say Philadelphia.
That's, you know, but like if you were to... I don't want to give North Korea any ideas or anything, but like a single nuke, John, would get you if they did Philly.
Do you think North Korea would waste a nuke on me though? Don't they have better targets than me?
I don't know if we're talking about rational actors in the world in any capacity right now. So I put nothing past anyone.
Kim Il-sung seems pretty rational to me.
All things being relative, Mr. John Gentile in Philadelphia,
back on the Punk News Podcast, back on the attack, Jack. So don't give me no flack, because we are not whack or hacks like Zach from Saved by the Bell having a Mac attack.
It's clear that sometimes when you do this, you plan it, because that was not planned, and it wasn't great.
I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, it was probably better than I'd do, but hey. Also, out of Chicago, am I going to say Chicago? Chicago?
Yeah.
Yay, Chicago. Yes. Okay. Out of Chicago, staffer Sean.
Hello.
Sean, do you want a last name, or do you want to be like Staffer Sean?
I have my last name is like on my Punk News profile. So
all right, so Mr.
I've
Sean
revealed
Crawford.
It to be Sean.
I don't want to like make you less of a person by make you some sort of like Punk News Podcast puppet that we trot out. Like you're a human. You have a name and a social insurance number.
I thought Staffer Sean makes him more of a person. He's got a nickname tag, a sign of respect and honor.
Yeah, but it seems like you could like at one point, like three seasons in, like a new actor gets cast as Staffer Sean, and it doesn't really matter because it's just a part.
We're giving a nickname to retain his intellectual property.
Yeah, pretty much. Sean, you live in Chicago. There's this place that's in Chicago that. Was like some weird industrial based barbecue place. I'm trying to think of what this was called because it was amazing when I was there. You must know what I'm talking about. Chicago.
I feel like I do, and I feel like I've been there, but I'm not sure.
Was it called?
And I'm forgetting what it's called.
Green Street Smoked Meats.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Have you been there?
Yes.
That place is great. We should stop doing this podcast and go there.
I saw, I should play Random 55 in one of these episodes. That's where I found out about Random 55, which is an awesome band, and they had, like, left their sticker there. Do you ever go to places and, like, bands leave their stickers around, and you just kind of, out of curiosity, check out, like, a random sticker, and it ends up being, like, an awesome band? I found one of those bands at, Green Street Smoked Meat, I think it was. I don't even remember the name.
I feel like whenever I see a random band sticker, it's like on a urinal, and I don't really want to dignify that with too much of my attention. John, have you been to Green Street Smoked Meats in Chicago?
I have not been to Green Street Smoked Meats.
Holy shit. Okay, we should have
I've been to Blue Avenue's Dried Cucumbers.
Oh,
Blue Avenue's
bad start to this episode.
Listen, what do you think of the guys that put their band sticker inside the urinal? I would never want to put my hand there.
I mean, like, you could probably get it in there without making a lot of contact, but...
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like a disservice to yourself, really, and to everyone else. Like, there's no dignity in that. There's no dignity for you putting the sticker in, even if it's not your band. There's certainly no dignity for the band. There's not really a lot of dignity for you being the guy that's got to pee on it. It's just not great. So, hi, if you've never listened to the Punk News Podcast, this is the Punk News Podcast. We talk about inanities. We're going to, this is kind of a weird week. There has not been a whole ton of major newsworthy stuff over the past 7 days. So we're going to chat about some of the little things that have gone on. And we're going to talk about
the little things that count.
Yeah. Except that when it comes to doing a news show, and then the little things are not very good. But yeah. And then we're also going to talk about some other stuff this week, some shows we've been to. John's something that John has injected himself into for reasons that I've not yet figured out. And we're going to do some mail. So we'll see what happens. If anyone wants to write us a letter, you can do so at podcast@punknews.org. That is how you get a hold of us. That is the best way. We encourage you to use the Twitter too, and to tweet any of us. I'm at Adam White. John is at just John Gentile, I believe, right?
JohnGentile.
There you go. Sean, do you have a Twitter that people can know?
Yes, it's I joined too late. That was I should probably change my Twitter username. It's at I joined too late. Yeah.
Don't you have a clever Instagram name or something too?
I think it was user banned. Yeah. You can follow me and there too if you want.
For Punk News, aren't you like I'm just here for the Pong or something?
Yeah, for Punk. Yeah, join us for Pong. It's a Vandal song, actually.
Ooh, I just got out punks.
Ah, Shaffer Sean out punks. Okay, so anyways, yeah, anyone wants to get a hold of us, you can get a hold of us in those ways, and we'll try to feature some of your stuff on here if it interests us. So anyways, John, do we have any mail before we get going?
We do. You can always use that podcast@punknews.org. This is from Jorge, and here's what Jorge has to say. Dear Punk News Podcast, I'm a longtime reader of the site, but I have not listened to many episodes of the podcast, and in fact, I'm just getting started. I saw that you have over 350 episodes of the Punk News Podcast. Where should I start as a new listener? Because with other podcasts that I've listened to, there are inside jokes that you don't get unless you start from the middle or the beginning someplace, such as a notable point. Where should I start listening to the Punk News Podcast? From Jorge.
This is hard. I'm dealing with this myself. There are certain podcasts that everyone that I know listens to, and I have not yet. And like, it's been told to me that I can't just grab the latest one. Like, I have to go start at the beginning, or I'm not going to get the in jokes. And it's that exact same scenario. And I've done it with a few. The one that I'm working on right now is daunting. It's going to take me the better part of a year to figure out how to get through it. And it's going to backlog everything else I'm listening to. So I don't know. So the first time this happened to me, it was people are like, oh, Adam, you got to go listen to the Flophouse. The Flophouse is really, really funny. And it is. But again, in jokes. So you have to start at the beginning. So I did that. But the Flophouse was okay because like one of those maybe comes out a month. And then like it happened with Roderick on the Line. So Roderick on the Line had to start at the beginning. Fine. I could do that and get through it. The one that right now is perplexing me is, and this is a compound answer here. So I've been told that I have to go listen to The Adventure Zone, which is a podcast that just finished, where it's basically like three brothers and their dad, and they're playing Dungeons and Dragons. The McElroy brothers, right?
Yeah.
Now,
they're playing Dungeons and Dragons?
They're playing Dungeons and Dragons together, jokingly.
Adam, are you a Dungeons and Dragons guy?
No, but I've just been told it's funny, right?
Sean, are you a Dungeons and Dragons guy?
No, but I have listened to an episode of The Adventure Zone. I love all the McElroy.
All these guys are too cool for D&D. Listen, I've played my fair share of D&D in my youth, people. No shame. No shame.
No, hey, I tried in my youth, but it didn't work because I had a friend that was into it, and I'm like, I'm a big dumb nerd. I want to do this. And he was like, oh, here, we'll read the monster manual. And I'm like, okay. And then we never played. So I'm looking at this book and I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. Like the Beholder is a cool looking thing. What do we actually do in this game? And then it never happened.
You
so kill anyways,
the Beholder, that's what you do.
How?
You fight it.
How?
You roll 20-sided dice and hope you get 17, 18, 19, or 20.
Ah, so anyway, I'm told I have to go listen to The Adventure Zone. But they're like, well, The Adventure Zone spins out of My Brother and Me, which is the McElroy's other big, they have a million podcasts, but like that's the other big one that they have. So like, oh, so you got to go listen to that. But you got to listen to that from the start because of the in-jokes. They started that podcast in 2010, John, and it goes weekly.
Wow.
So I've Right now, I'm on, like, I got through 2010 and I'm on 2011. And it's funny, I enjoy it, but holy fuck, like, by the time I get those two podcasts done, I'm going to be 63 years old. So I definitely do not want to advise to our fledgling listener that you do that for the show, because, well, I mean, partly because we're a news show and a lot of the stuff that we talk about is timely and, you know, time sensitive. So it is maybe not necessarily interesting to you to hear that Against Me is going on tour, in June of, you know, 2015 or anything like that. And I just assume that every show that you listen to ours going backwards in time, you get some sort of horrible decline in quality that I'm not aware of, that I would be embarrassed to actually go revisit. So I don't know. If you ask me, just kind of like hop on board and we'll get going. And things that there'll be in jokes about should become apparent. I don't think we're all that funny that it's going to matter that much. That's what I think. That said, there's someone that's been hounding me on Reddit for a long time to give them the pre 2011 or whatever the fuck it was episodes. Like, at some point I cut the feed off at like January of whatever year, and there are episodes before that, but they're old. They're old, John. They're old.
I love those old episodes. It's like Hot Water Music had put out a new single. Brian, what do you think? I think XYZ. Very good. Rich, what do you think? I think XYZ. Very good. Adam, what do you think? I think XYZ. Very good. Let's move on to the next topic. Now we're talking about, you know, the Jam or whatever.
Only true fans will remember Brian and Rich.
That's true.
I feel that, I mean, not to speak ill of our early shows or anything, but I feel that we're a little bit looser now, just from having done this after for a while, and
we've got more pizzazz now. More pizzazz.
Well, I guess like pizzazz, but I just think we give a little bit less of a shit about the format, and you know, we're older, John. We're wiser. We're not listening. We're not wearing like baggy pants anymore. So
speak for yourself, man. I just got three new sets of Jankos. Man, I'm still combing. I'm parting my hair right down the middle. You know, I've got the ball chain necklace. Man, I'm living it up. I've got the oversized Hurley skateboard T-shirt on. Vans.
You see, maybe it's best that you don't go listen to old shows, because then you would have realized that, like, that Jankos joke that John made, he's made like 50 times, and then that it wouldn't be as funny as it was if it was fresh. So anyways, yeah, hey, if you want to get on board and just start listening to stuff,
wait, you made the Jankos joke, not me.
You just said it.
You said it. You're like, we're not wearing our baggy jeans anymore. Yeah, so you set me up. You set me up for the joke.
I did. Okay, yeah, so all right, here, do this. I have a better idea, listener guy. Start listening to the show, if we haven't already wrapped it for you, because we just may have. And then...
You would think listening to a punk related news podcast would be this difficult to get started.
There's seriously nothing going on this week. So what I would do is, as you hit something you do not understand, email us and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then what we can do is we can do like the history, like you know if you get like a, you go buy an issue of, I don't know, like Uncanny X-Men or something like that, and there's going to be like a page in the front of the book, I don't know if they do this anymore, but there was like a page at one point in the front of the book where they're like, who's Archangel, and they explain all of this stuff, because they're not necessarily assuming that the new reader of the comic has like read the past 60 years of convoluted X-Men history. We should just do that.
I think what we should do is, when we make a reference, we pause it and then have that little asterisk, and then in a little box down there, it says C-Punk News Podcast, episode 321.
Pop-up bubbles. We're going to do pop-up bubbles. You won't be able to read them, but you'll hear the little bloop. So then if you hear the bloop, you know that there is something that you should be aware of.
You know, we still need, I'm sorry, Steph Shama, but we still need to do the John and Adam go to college advice episode that was asked for, which I think we should do.
I forgot about that. Okay, I'm going to make a note here. So what is this, like you and me go to college?
No, it's our advice as medium age punk rockers who have gone through college. What should you do in college? What should you do? What should you not do? With the understanding that we're not experts, and you know we haven't like studied this or anything, but our personal experience of how you could best maximize your college experience, both educationally and socially, including an interest in the arts.
Oh, holy fuck! My whole thing is going to be things I wish that I did in college, and now we're
yeah, me too, me so, too, man. That's why
good advice. Good advice. Yes, don't do what we did. Do these things that we're speculating about that might turn out for you, but because we didn't do them, clearly didn't kill us, so they might kill you.
I think all of these sense. Things, like the extra annotations, the college episodes, these should all be the Patreon like extras.
The Punk News Podcast, the college years.
Oh, God. All right. Is there any more mail?
that's all we got for this week. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And please do write us. We love getting your mail. Even though we do have to get better at attacking people that write. We're always like, write us. And then someone says, I disagree with you guys. And we're like, you're wrong, dickhead. We got to stop doing that.
Okay, so John, I guess the first like non-news topic that you wanted to interject here. So you are now a Brony.
I'm not a Brony. I'm a Swiftie, apparently, and I don't even really like Taylor Swift's music so much. But here's the thing: so Taylor Swift put out a new single this week. I think it's called "Look What You Made Me Do," and it's about how much she doesn't like Kanye West and she takes some shots at Kanye West. If you don't know the whole thing, it goes back. We got to rewind here. So Taylor Swift won some award. I think it was a Video Music Award or whatever. And as she was accepting the award, this was in about 2011, I think, maybe 2012. While she was accepting the award, Kanye West jumped up on the stage, literally grabbed the microphone out of her hand, and he said, I like you, Taylor Swift, or whatever, but Beyonce had the best video of the year, and she should have won, which was a very rude thing to do. Taylor Swift, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. Pop music is just not my thing, but whatever. Well, sometimes it is, but Taylor Swift is a perfectly fine pop star, in my opinion. Not really my kind of music. So she handled it with grace and poise, if you ask me. So then a little bit later on, Kanye decided to become even more of a dick. And I'm trying to remember what the next thing he did. I think I'm missing something here. But he put out a song where he said, I feel like Taylor and I should have sex. I made that bitch famous. And some people thought that was kind of lame. You know, he feels he's entitled to have sex with Taylor Swift. And also that he called her a bitch. And then he lied and said, oh, well, she said it was okay for me to say that. But that wasn't true. She never okayed that. So he lied. Then after that, he had a video where he was naked in a bed with a mannequin that was clearly naked Taylor Swift, which some people thought was lame, and I thought was kind of lame too. I thought it was both interesting art and lame. And here and there, Kanye West and Kim Kardashian have basically been taking shots at Taylor since then, and Taylor Swift is pretty much usually taking the high road, trying to blow it off. You know what I mean? I think Kanye West, I think he's a talented musician, but I think he's very pretentious, and I think his level of pretension does not meet his level of talent. I think he's good. I think a lot of what he does is kind of crappy, and I think he's better in concept than he is in actual execution. But I think he's a talented individual. I think he does have interesting ideas, but I don't think he's nearly as interesting or as talented as he says he is or as general society says he is. The point being, Taylor Swift just put out a new single. It's the first single off her new album. It's called "Look What You Made Me Do," or I think that's what it's called. And on the track, she doesn't even diss him that bad, but basically she says like I don't like your tilted stage or whatever. That's one of Kanye's goofy stages or whatever. So she took some shots at him. And the Taylor Swift fans loved it. However, I saw a very, very, very interesting phenomenon that I really did not expect at all. I thought people were going to be like, this is cool, man. Taylor Swift's finally battling back. She's telling Kanye, what you're doing is not cool. However, what happened with a great deal of people, and I'm going to take a side note in just a minute, is people said, how dare Taylor Swift attack Kanye? Taylor said she didn't want to be part of the quote narrative, but now she is. And the people even were saying like, and also that Taylor Swift's new album drops on the 10th anniversary of the death of Kanye West's mother. What I thought was most surprising, and I didn't understand this at all, and maybe Staff or Sean or maybe Adam White, you guys can talk about this, or maybe you have an opinion, maybe you don't. A lot of people that I respect their opinions, a lot of writers and just people in general, people that I think would clearly call themselves feminist and are very into feminist the feminist discussion, they were attacking Taylor Swift. I couldn't believe it. I really could not believe it. They were like they said, oh, she said she didn't want to be in the narrative, and now she is. How dare she put this out on the 10th anniversary of the death of Kanye West's mom. Here's Taylor playing the victim once again. I couldn't believe this. This really baffled me. And here's why. It's like this is a young woman standing up for herself who has been treated in a very sexist manner. Kanye called her a bitch. Kanye said he deserved to have sex with her without talking about her consent. He made a naked model of her and then was essentially suggested he was having sex with her in a music video. Is that interesting art? Maybe. I would say it is. Is it sexist? Yes, it is. Is it offensive? Maybe. Kanye's allowed to be sexist. He's allowed to be offensive. That's the wonderful thing about the First Amendment. That's the wonderful thing about free speech. However, it's also kind of bullshit behavior. And so now we've got Taylor Swift striking back. And for some reason, the feminists, non-feminists too, mind you, but some people that – and actually some musicians that kind of feminist issues are the very forefront of their music were writing articles about how it was lame for Taylor Swift to do that. I can't fathom it. I don't understand it, but I think I do understand it. And the point being is let's take a step back and let's reverse the situation. What if some whiny emo guy put out a video – where he had a naked Beyonce in his bed and said, oh, I'm having sex with Beyonce, or I should be allowed to have sex with Beyonce. That guy would be torn to shreds, as he probably should. What if there was a video where some whiny emo guy called Lady Gaga a bitch or Rihanna a bitch? That guy would be torn to shreds, as well he should be, you know? But because Kanye does it, it's cool and funny. The answer is it's a double standard, and it's a sexist double standard. It's cool and funny for Kanye to, you know, show a naked Taylor Swift and say, I'm allowed to have sex with Taylor Swift. That's cool and funny. But when Taylor Swift, a female, does the exact same thing and strikes back, not even as dirty as Kanye did it, considerably less dirty than Kanye did it, she's the one that's attacked and insulted and saying, you're playing the victim, you're injecting yourself into this narrative. No, she's sticking up for herself. So – And so we see this bizarre double standard from both men and women. And I was not surprised by the men because a lot of men douchebags. But feminist women were attacking her. And I can't fathom it. But the point being, I can fathom it. And here's why. Taylor Swift, she's pretty talented. She's a good singer. She's a very attractive woman. And so I think when some people see an attractive woman doing something very well or doing something aggressive, they attack her because that's not what attractive women are supposed to be doing, even within certain feminist circles. Not all feminists, mind you, but the ones that I saw. It's like she wants to have it all. She wants to be good looking and, you know, represent feminism. You can't do both, seems to be the opinion, which is, of course, is a poorly thought out opinion. And your looks have nothing to do with feminism whatsoever. In this context, at least, you know, you can be traditionally a very feminine, attractive woman and being a feminist. You can reject the concept of feminist, traditional feminine ideals and be a feminist. That's kind of what feminism is all about. You can do either. So they're attacking Taylor Swift, I think, not because they're disagreeing with what she's doing, but because she's a pretty girl and they don't want pretty girls to be aggressive like this. So they're going to attack her, even though Kanye called her a bitch, even though Kanye said I should have sex with her, even though Kanye stole the microphone from her, which is insane. One last thing that I wanted to mention. I just slipped my mind. What was it? Crap. The death of Kanye's mother. People are like, how dare she put out an album on the 10th anniversary of the death of Kanye's mother? First of all, there's no way she contemplated that. There's no way the marketing committee looked at the death of Kanye's mother. We'll put out an album. Did not happen. But even so, let's say that marks against Taylor. Well, Kanye still called her a bitch. Kanye still said he's entitled to have sex with her. Kanye still showed a naked picture, basically made a naked representation of her in his video and said he was having sex with her. Kanye still stole the microphone from her. So which is worse? Clearly, Kanye's behavior. But Kanye somehow the okay guy and Taylor's the bad guy? I can't fathom it. Stanford, Sean, and Adam White, I don't know if you agree with me, disagree with me, but I don't understand, but I think I do understand why Taylor Swift is getting backlash when it seems to me she's finally fighting back and saying, all right, enough of this bullshit. I'm sticking up for myself.
Well, first of all, I think I remember, like, back when those incidents happened, when Kanye stole the mic, when Kanye had those lyrics. I remember there being quite a bit of controversy surrounding that. So I don't think that he's free from controversy either. The only thing that I don't remember there being that much of a backlash about was that music video. But the music video just basically had like a ton of celebrities. It wasn't like specifically like targeting her. Like it, I think they had like a model of Donald Trump in the bed too. So like that was
further underscoring the sexist double standard. There wasn't that big of a backlash. That's bullshit. You know what I mean? That's bullshit.
I think just for that music video, though. I mean, I guess at least like specifically about Taylor, because you know it was there were a ton of celebrities in that. I remember. I'm trying to remember what my other points were. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not tuned into the same channels as you are, but I've not been seeing much backlash against the Taylor thing. I've been seeing
I've been seeing a lot of
negative opinions because people think the song is bad, and I personally do too. I feel like it's kind of cheesy, but I haven't seen people like angry about the message itself.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Katie Alice Greer, I respect her. She wrote an entire article today, Talkhouse, talking about how shitty Taylor Swift is. Katie Alice Greer, whose entire forefront is feminist issues. And I respect Katie. I think she's a cool artist. But I disagree with her entirely. And I was blown away that she would write that. And I saw a lot of other people of the similar mindset write or talk about the exact same thing on Twitter and Facebook.
John, I think it is amazing that you decided that you needed to explain the Kanye on stage taking the mic thing.
Oh, why? Because like, everyone knows it?
Yeah, it's like, did you want to explain the election from November or any other obvious shit that you want to get off your chest that people might want to know about? I don't disagree with necessarily any of your read on this, with the exception of the fact that... Well, not with the exception. My own personal experience with this story was I don't give a shit about who either of these people are from an artistic standpoint. So when all of this blew up on the internet, I don't know. I went for a walk, I guess. I ignored it. So I don't have any particular firsthand opinion about either the song or anyone's or any particular backlash. But I'm aware of the general... The oeuvre of the backlash and the story and all that, but I was not clued into that. But John, you had quite a diatribe on that, so I'm gonna let your which you said float because you know that's some
deep thought, man. That's what we do. Some
deep thought about pop stars and the people that talk about them.
I'm just tired of people bagging on Taylor Swift. She's just doing the pop star thing. She's not doing anything different than Rihanna or Beyonce, but somehow Taylor Swift is the bad guy? Bullshit. Bullshit. Bullshit.
The only part about this that I thought was weird was where they were talking about, like, oh, she's releasing this on the 10th anniversary of the death of Kanye's mother. Like, even if she was doing that intentionally, who the fuck cares? Like, no one else in the world gets special consideration on the anniversary of the death of a parent. Why should Kanye? It's like the 10th anniversary of the death of the Queen Mother, right? He's not
like the 10th anniversary, like 9/11 or something. You know?
Yeah. Maybe it is personally sad for him that it's the 10th anniversary of the death of his mother, and that's fine, but who gives a shit? And the rest of the world. So
I would counter though is, and this is something that people don't understand in punk rock either, is Kanye and Taylor are battling. So if you don't want to battle, you do have to take special precautions. I mean, obviously, Kanye's mother is important to him. So the 10th anniversary of the death of his mother probably is a meaningful thing to him. And I understand that. And I certainly wish him no ill will with regards to that. So if you did battle with somebody in the past, but you don't want to battle in the future, you kind of have to be careful and you know, step around that kind of a thing. But I don't think this was intentional. I don't think anybody would have thought of that. You know what I mean?
I just don't get why he's such like a special flower that's the consideration that to me, that's such a bizarre thing to bring up as one of the potential issues dumb situation.
Well, if they didn't have a beef, it wouldn't matter. But the mere fact that they have a beef, people are considering it a low blow. You know what I mean?
I mean, up until this point, it kind of seemed like one-sided beef.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. And the minute Taylor fights back, she's the bad guy. Whatever.
I'm not saying that she doesn't have the right to do that. I mean, I guess I just kind of understand why people would be like, you know, she's kind of been above it all, and then to kind of step in and kind of weigh in on it. Like, she's perfectly within her right to do that, and, you know, I don't have a problem with her doing that. Just, like, I don't know. I can see how people would think, like, I don't know, she's kind of taking a step down from being above this whole one-sided controversy.
John, I miss the old ska beefs. Those were the better beefs to me.
Oh, was it a Voodoo Glow Skulls? And who was the other band where they stole their trumpet?
No. Come on. I'm thinking like Derek Morgan's Blazing Fire.
From the 60s.
Yeah. Those were beefs where, like, I could at least get down to the music. So I gave more of a shit than the rest of this.
Was it Lee Perry and Bunny Lee? That'll be my song. I'll play it at the end. I'll talk about the importance of that later on. Adam White, man, you saw one of your favorite bands, Shadowy Men, on a shadowy planet.
Yeah, that was fulfilling a childhood dream of mine. So yeah, Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet played on the roof of the Niagara Artist Center last Friday, and we went and saw them, and it was like a little sold out show on the roof under the stars. It was pretty amazing. I mean, first of all, like, Shadowy Men they shouldn't really be around at all at this point, as they were a three piece, and one of the members died a few years ago of cancer. So they weren't necessarily a band that was supposed to be doing anything. But the bass player that they brought in to play for them is Dallas Good of the Sadies, who played in the band Phonocomb with the two members of Shadowy Men after Shadowy Men broke up initially. So he's sort of like tied into that whole family of artists anyways. So it totally makes sense that he's there, and he's just an amazing player in and of itself. So it didn't feel like, you know, too much of a stretch for me to go and to call this band, you know, for all intents and purposes, this was Shadowy Men. I don't know. Do people know who Shadowy Men and Shadowy Planet are? I hope they do. Maybe they don't. Shadowy Men was an instrumental three piece, I guess, rock and roll band, a little bit of like a surf rock band kind of thing from Toronto that was popular, at least in the Canadian era, in the 90s and late 80s, I guess. They're known, I guess, to most people as the band that was the Kids in the Hall's house band. So they played the Kids in the Hall theme song in the end credits of Kids in the Hall. You can see them playing their instruments because there was footage of them playing in there. When Kids in the Hall was just doing live shows and stuff like that, when they just started in Toronto, Shadowy Men was the band that would like play with them as part of their live shows. Lorne Michaels of Saturday Night Live, who, you know, famously was, you know, got his start with the Kids in the Hall. He at one point called them something like bad porno music, and he didn't want them as part of his TV enterprise. And the Kids in the Hall went to bat for them and said, no, like they're part of our whole thing. So, you know, you want the Kids in the Hall, then you get Shadowy Men too. So I listened to like Savvy Showstoppers, which was their first record, a ton before I was ever even into punk rock. I listened to that record and a few other kind of like similar like 90s CanCon staple things a whole lot. So it meant a lot to me to go and to see them play. The thing to me that was just so weird was I'm at this show and my wife and I are there, and we're kind of standing there having a beer, and then someone is calling to us, and we turn and we look, and it's the husband of someone who I work with. And he's, you know, he's 10, 15 years older than me. So he was more of the era that he would have been like going to Shadowy Men shows when they were gigging around Ontario and stuff like that. And he's a blue collar guy. He's not a weird internet music dweeb or anything like me or my crowds, right? Like, he was there because, like, you know, hey, this is a band that he saw back in the day and he wanted to go see this band. He wasn't there for any like dumb hipster reasons that I was probably there for. And the one thing that I super admire about this guy is just how friendly that he is, how he can go and he can just like become the life of the party and part of a conversation and everything. So the band finishes their set. They were playing two sets. They come off, they go for their intermission, and they're kind of quasi milling around, but they mostly got out of the way, except for the drummer and the lead of Shadowy Man, is a guy named Don Pyle. Don Pyle is a legend as far as the Canadian music universe goes. Like, legendary producer, like the frontman of this band, like legendary player. He's been profiled in like every like major publication that you could come across. Like he's a name. Like Don Pyle is the man. And we go and we get another beer and we come back and Don is sitting next to the husband of this guy that I work with. And they're just like shooting the shit and laughing it up and having a conversation and all this. And meanwhile, like, I'm like, I can't bring myself to go talk to him because like, I don't have anything to say and I'm too old to be like, hey, Don Pyle, come do a selfie with me, because I'd feel like a total knob doing that. But at the same time, I also don't want to go the other way and walk up to him and be like, sir, I think your work is very influential. Like, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to go say to this guy. I'm like, I totally admire everything this guy is about. I'd probably love it if I had a selfie with Don Pyle, right? But I'm like, I don't know how to approach this. And meanwhile, this other guy, happy-go-lucky blue-collar worker guy is just like, hey, Don Pyle, and then sit down and have this big fucking conversation. And I'm so jealous of people that are far less socially awkward than me and can just go inject themselves into having a conversation with someone and don't have to stand around and think about it. Rah. Anyways, though,
I understand your pain, and here's why. You know, I've interviewed a lot of bands, and I think I'm pretty good at interviewing bands. But the minute I like see someone at a show or whatever, or like try to have a conversation with them, it's like I got like nothing to talk about. You know, it's like it's a completely different dynamic, and I understand how you feel. And I think we're just weird dudes, Adam, and I don't know if we're going to be able to get around that. I think we're just unusual people to a degree, so we'll never be able to just bro down and talk about, hey, did you see the latest sports match? Boy, was it good for the home team.
Like,
you know what
like,
I mean?
I could literally think of nothing to say to this person that like I have total admiration for and was basically within like, you know, I needed to so much of like reach my hand out and tap him on the shoulder. I could have said, hey, and said anything, but I'm just like, I'm going to drink my beer and just, I don't know, like soak in your essence, I guess, because I don't know what the fuck to say. And because
yeah, like when I try to do that, I'll go up to him, I'm like, oh man, listen, man, I interviewed you for Punk News, and they'll be like, oh yeah, hey, thanks for that. I'll be like, yeah, man, the new record's like really cool, man. How have things gone? Things going good? They're like, yeah, things going good. And I'll be like, well, nice to see you. Then I'll walk away. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, like the best I can think of is like, hey, you're Don Pyle. Like, he knows he's Don Pyle. I don't need to tell him that.
Adam, I got a feeling Stanford Sean is good at talking to people.
As far as musician people?
Yes.
I don't know. I haven't had too many interactions. I mean, I did a bit last June when I went to Dumberfest, and I had Tom Trauma chauffeuring me around and introducing me to all the people, because he was kind of like familiar with
I bet you Tom Trauma is really good at that, Adam.
Yeah. So
yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are like in the Punk News universe that would probably be really super good at that. Like Tom Trauma would be good at that for sure. And I bet you that he would not have even the thought of like what would be awkward there. You walk up, you say hello, you shake their hand, you don't be a fucking weirdo, and everything's fine. But I'm like, I can't turn off the weirdo part, I guess. I'm just,
you know, I feel your pain, dude. I feel it's like, what do I talk about this person with? You know what I mean? It's like, I think it's because maybe the only thing we have to talk about is music, maybe. And you don't want to, like, if you see, like, I don't know, like, whoever, you know what I mean? Keith Morris. You don't be like, Keith Morris, I love music. How about Off? I loved your song Wipeout. It's great. It's like
well, like, I did it to one of the Constantines not too long ago where again, actually the same venue where Steve Lemke from the Constantines was playing on the rooftop, and then I walked up to him afterwards and I went to have a conversation with him, and thankfully I didn't have my tattoo that I have right now, or else I would have been like, I have your band on my arm. But
you're in me.
Yeah. So I kind of wandered up and like I started this dumb conversation about like, I don't know, like some EP that they have that was never released on vinyl, or like something that was like clearly not on anybody's mental radar and was like super in the nerdy weeds. And I'm like, and then afterwards I'm just like, why did I have this dumb conversation that I'm sure he was trying to escape about an EP that he recorded, you know, 15 years ago that he doesn't give a shit about anymore. Like, why did I do that? So anyways, Shadowy Men are great. You should go see them if you get a chance. Just don't talk to me. That's my advice. Sean.
Yes.
Did you see a show and what was it?
Were you incredibly awkward? Yes.
Was it similarly great and yet at the same time illustrated your personal failings?
Well, the show that I wanted to talk about this last week, but like last week was just so packed. So this is very old now, but I also put on my first show since the
what you put on the show?
Yeah, since two podcasts ago.
What?
Yeah, I mean, like nothing to any extent of what you did with this.
Well, Sean, listen.
I mean, it was an attic. But yeah, it was like the co-worker of one of my bandmates, and they had just an attic that like it was full of just like their old antique stuff or whatever attics are full of, or still like nails sticking on out of the walls. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We brought a bunch of people from Aurora down because we've been part of that scene, and we brought them an hour and a half away to our show, and yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time. This is a while ago now, but I haven't been on the podcast yet. A lot of really great bands there. Porcupine is a band I think people should definitely check out. They are in the running to go to This Is Hardcore Fest next year. So my little shout out for Porcupine. You should go vote for them to go to This Is Hardcore Fest because they're really great guys and make good music.
Cool.
Yeah.
A show in an attic sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. It went surprisingly, like, no one got impaled by any of the nails. I mean, I was kind of like manning the outside of the pit the entire time, just trying to put
people
away.
In an attic?
Yes. Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Hold on. We had to, I guess, contextualize this attic here because, like, was it the kind of attic where, like, if you misstep, you fall through some insulation and through drywall?
There was like one corner, like there was one death corner, in the attic.
Was it like super hot up there and humid?
Yeah, but we had a fan and it was fine. So, yeah. Yeah.
You know that. I mean, I'm glad it didn't happen or anything, but should you have all died a horrible death, people have been like, well, it was in an attic. What do they expect?
Well, I thought they were saying, oh, attic death cult springing up across North America.
I would do a show in my attic, but you'd probably want to fall through the roof. All right. So speaking of shows, this coming weekend, I'm going up to Northern Quebec. Well, it's not really Northern Quebec, but north to me, Quebec, to go to FME, which is the music festival that is happening up in the Abitibi region there that I've been writing some stuff about on Punk News. So, John, I read something and it's made me think that I should probably say it publicly, so then if it happens, we'll get a lot of listeners.
Oh, so, okay. Oh, yeah. This is quite gruesome, Adam.
Well, I'm trying to leverage my potential demise for the sake of the show.
I'm all for that.
Right, because I mean, unfortunately, the show isn't on my insurance or anything like that, so you're not going to benefit monetarily. But the curiosity that we'll get from the sick onlookers of the internet should clearly like give us another like couple hundred subscribers. So I'm going to the show like as a journalist, where I'm going to cover it. And I'm going up there, like with a bunch of other like journalists from Ontario, and, we're being flown on an airplane to go there because it's way the fuck out of here. And so we're flying into Toronto and it's some little charter plane or something we're being stuck on. And I went and I'm like, I've never heard of this airline. So I went and I, I Googled the airline, which is a bad idea. Don't do that. So I googled the airline. It's like, oh, this is a regional airline that only runs out of the airport in the tiny little mining town where you're going to this music festival from. So I was like, okay, sure, those exist. That's not that interesting. And then the other three quarters of their Wikipedia page are like, in 2008, a plane crashed from this airline and killed all 11 people on board. And I'm like, oh, man, now I know this. And I'm not the kind of person that's scared of flying or anything like that. But, you know, I read this and I thought, ah, now I'm going to be thinking about that. So.
Well, Adam, I hope you live.
I mean, I generally hope I do, too. However.
However,
in the horrible, horrible situation where I do not, John, and it is just a gruesome, gruesome, fiery mess. If that's the case, then it's going to get out where it's like he talked about that on the podcast, and then there people are going to go seek out the podcast, and they're going to come here.
Yeah, it'll be like one of those like songs from the 60s or whatever where they talk about their death before it happens and be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, like that's the only reason anyone gives a shit about like Lynyrd Skynyrd, right, is that they all died. Like no one cared before that.
Adam, should I continue the podcast without you? Or should I replace you? Should I just make it the John G and Friends show? Or should I end the podcast?
Well, I mean, you should still include me and give me space to speak. Just won't, right?
Just edit together old sound clips.
Yeah, we'll do hologram Adam White on the podcast.
Ooh, yeah, okay, yeah, sorry. We could do that. But hold on, what's that thing that, what is this?
That, like, editing software that you can, like, make sentences out of old sound recordings with?
No, see, you know how, let's see here. Isn't there a thing in Judaism where there's a certain meal and at the meal they have like an empty plate setting? And
I think that's at Rosh Hashanah. You leave a plate out for, is it Moses?
Or Moses? No, or, I'm no, not Jewish, not, so I don't actually know. I said that like you can only know that if you're Jewish. That was a dumb thing to say. But you know what I mean, right? Like,
yeah, you know
basically.
What you mean.
They ceremoniously make space for this incorporeal being.
I think that's Elijah the prophet at Seder.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. So that could be like the podcast and me. So you just be like, "What'd you think, Adam?" And you just like let dead air.
We'll leave an open mic. Yeah, it sounds good to me. Yeah. And yeah, then some little kid will say, "Hey, John, why do we always leave that one microphone open on the podcast?" Son, that's for Adam White in case he returns.
So I figure that by expressing all this right now, it's either going to definitely happen or hopefully not. So, you know, I'm covered in both cases. There's other two options? Like, yeah, it'll sort of happen?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's lots of stuff. You ever seen, like, Star Trek The Next Generation? You get caught in, like, a time loop where, like, it explodes over and over and over, and you have to figure out how to make it not happen this time. Something like that.
Oh, I'd kill at one of those, man. I would get out of that thing quick. I'm always trying to break time loops. John, I'm trying to break a time loop right now on this show. So before we keep going, I'm going to play a song from a band that's going to be playing at the FME Fest that I'm going to go up to. This is Montreal synth punk band, Moog punk band, Duchess Says, with a song, I Repeat Myself, that comes off their recent record, Science Nouvelle, that was released on Slovenly in the States and a label that I can't remember in Canada. But anyways,
and they've got a Burger Records connection too.
They do. They, I forget why. Did they release one of their past
Burger Records
links or
when their albums were not available in the States, Burger Records did release them on cassette.
Yeah, so that the great thing about covering this fest is that I knew like none of the artists that were playing this before we got started with it, so I sort of had to learn. So it sort of opened my, you know, opened me up to all these Quebec artists that I wasn't aware of. So, anyways, here is Duchess Says with their song "I Repeat Myself," which maybe is also about trying to break out of a Star Trek time loop. Who knows? There you go. We'll be right back. we're back. We got a bunch of stories that we want to get through. None of them are particularly long, but we've talked a whole lot about dumb stuff, so we have time to do that. So first of all, no warning. The Toronto Hardcore Legends, if you will, they have reunited. They got back together in 2013. They released a handful of singles and played some one-off shows and things like that. But they are now putting out their first full-length since reunification. It is called Torture Culture, and it's coming out on October 13th. It's being released by Ben Cook's label, Bad Actors, Ben Cook being the frontman. It's also being put out by Paper Bag in Canada, I think. Let me confirm that on some party of the Canadian thing. Last Gang in Canada. I always get Last Gang and Paper Bag mixed up. Yeah, Last Gang Records in Canada and Ben Cook's Bad Actors label. So that's what's coming out on. There is a single from it that is out called In the City. It is super moshy. So I don't know. People should go check this out. Ben Cook. People know who Ben Cook is. I hope they know who Ben Cook is. John, give him the Wikipedia on who Ben Cook is.
Ben Cook is one of the most fascinating people in modern punk rock. His first band wasn't No Warning, but it's one of his early bands. And he was only like 17 when No Warning like released their first record. So he started out as a hardcore guy, and he's got a very, you know, let's mosh kind of voice. But if you see the guy in person, he's like 5'4". He's like this tiny, tiny little guy. So you say, okay, well, he's a hardcore guy. Then eventually he gets drafted into Effed Up with Damian Abraham and those guys. And he starts singing like – in that band, he kind of sings like almost like a choir boy, a very high-pitched, clean-sounding voice. And then after that, he spins off into all these projects. He's got a band called The Roommates, which is kind of like a power pop thing. He's got Marvelous Darlings, which is kind of like a power pop thing. He put out – I can't remember the name of the record. Adam, like, wait, what's that 12-inch record that he put out that is basically kind of like a 90s soul R&B record?
It's called Ripe for Love. It's under Ripe for Love. So Ben Cook does a lot of solo stuff under the name Young Gov.
Young Gov. So, that's what it was under, Young Gov.
Yeah. So Ripe for Love is a 12-inch that he had that came out last year. That's like this like AM radio soul pop stuff that is great.
Go ahead, Adam.
No, I was singing the praises.
And when he was like 10, he was like an actor. He was in like Goosebumps. He was in Pride and Prejudice. He was in some other stuff. And if you like read interviews with him or read his social media posts, he's a weird guy. Like he'll just say, I'm going to go live in Brazil for 4 months. And somehow he just lives in Brazil for 4 months and then comes back. So he's a very interesting guy. And he's not your stereotypical hardcore guy at all. But the irony being No Warning is extremely traditionalist in their recording, in their sound recordings, and this new track sounded like basically if aliens came down and said, we want to hear what hardcore sounds like, you would play them this track and say, that's exactly what modern hardcore sounds like. Fascinating.
Yeah. So anyways, there's new No Warning. Sean, you got anything to chuck in on that one?
No, I think you kind of covered that.
Yeah, so anyways, you can go find that. It's on Punk News. Speaking of the great nation of Canada here, there's a music video from a fellow Toronto act, I guess, Sam Coffey and the Iron Lungs. They put out a video for the song Judy. It's from their latest full length, which is self-titled, but not their first. It always feel like I have to quantify that when someone is a self-titled full length later in their career. Anyways, that was released by Burger Records and Dynalone. The video was directed by Sean Cosmerly, who is in a band from Sudbury, Ontario. I feel like I should mention this in case anyone wants to look it up, called Dirty Princes. So anyways, Sean, he directed this video, and it is about a woman named Judy, and Sean's mother is a woman named Judy, and she stars in the video. So you should go check it out because it's super fun. It is, you know, sort of about it's like if your parents decided that they wanted to become denim clad rock and roll people. At least your mom. your dad's just gonna mow the lawn. But anyways, though, they you should go check it out. It's a fun video. There's a link to a interview that they did about the video too, because I guess they were pretty emotionally affected putting this thing together. So it's good. You should go watch it. You should go listen to the Sam Coffee record anyways, because it's one of those like record of the summer kind of things. It's incredibly fun, light, uplifting, power poppy stuff.
And plus the video is hilarious. I'm loving how now that there's really not that much money in music, and also now that video technology is fairly cheap, but you can't do like digital animation, a lot of bands are making like 80s style music videos where they're kind of – they look professionally done, but they're low tech and they're funny and fun. I love – that's probably my favorite style of video. You know what I mean?
It's a video that does not involve a lot of computer, because I think that's the flip side of it, right?
But I'm saying the video is not overly serious. Like in the late 90s and early 2000s, like all these videos were so serious. It's a funny music video, kind of like Beastie Boys' Fight for Your Right to Party, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, all those wacky videos from the mid-80s. I love those videos, and this is kind of like that.
Yeah, I'll give it that. That's a good read on it. All right, John, take this next one.
All right, listen. Punk News homeboy, guy that we have great admiration for, Jello Biafra, recently joined Dead Cross on stage. Dead Cross is the new band or newish band with Dave Lombardo, with I can't believe I'm forgetting his name, the guy from Faith No More. What's his name from Faith No More?
Mike Patton
from Faith No More, Dave Lombardo, and a couple of other guys. Jello Biafra does what he does in the Bay Area with a lot of bands that he respects. He jumps on stage with them and does a song with them. He did a version of Nazi Punk's Fuck Off, and this one was Nazi Trump's Fuck Off, and all the band members wore the alternative tentacles t-shirt, Nazi Trump's Fuck Off, designed by Dominic Davi of Tsunami Bomb. And the video was a viral hit, if you will. It was posted all over the internet. This is not the first time Jello has updated a song. With the Melvins, he did California Uber Alleys, where they made fun of Arnold Schwarzenegger. So I think this video – I mean the video is – there's not a whole deep meaning to it. And the kind of the point of the recording and the video is that there's not a deep meaning to it. It's saying the blatant obvious. But in this age where a lot of punk bands – well, actually, not a lot. Well, some punk bands, a lot of punk bands that we have on Punk News – focus purely on social issues, I guess, if you will, and they don't like, you know, have the broader fiery or the broader edge of the political issue. It's so not refreshing, but it's heartening to see Jello Biafra still doing what Jello does, still being as acidic and I guess outright aggressive, if you will, but positively aggressive with regards to the current political situation. And I appreciate that he's doing that, and I think he's killing it.
Yeah, I mean,
there's not a lot to say about it. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, it's kind of that. I mean, it doesn't really say all. Did he change any of the lyrics to the verse? I don't think that.
I don't think so.
It's a fun kind of spin on it. I'm not sure if I would go as far as to say that it's like, you know, any sort of political anthem. I mean, it is like very political, but it's not really saying all that much, I feel like, on a political front. Like it's definitely saying something, but like, you know, it's just kind of a variation on the old classic.
It's nice to see Jello fired up on stage and running around and everything like that. I mean, it's not the greatest sound quality of a video for one of these things. It's, you know, an off to the side of the stage type deal, so you're not getting a great mix or anything like that. So
can I just brag and talk about the guest appearances I've seen Jello do when I live in the Bay Area? I saw him join Napalm Death and do Nazi Punk's Fuck Off, because Napalm Death famously covered that song. I saw him do Baby Punches with Leftover Crack. I saw him do Rebel Rebel with King Kong live on stage. I saw him do Lardactyl with Amoebix. If you live in the Bay Area, it really is a treat. You get to see Jello come out and do a song with these bands like all the time. He does it all the time, and it's awesome.
Cool. Is that King Kong, like King Kong and his Shrines, King Kong?
King Kong, yeah. Did I say King Kong? I meant King
Kong.
No.
I was just asking. I haven't had a chance to see him. I've always wanted to see him live.
He's cool. But Jello's awesome live, but King Kong is really awesome live too. You should see him.
All right. Do you want to play a song?
Yeah, sure. So I alluded to this earlier. Adam White said, I wish beefs were like the old ska beefs. Well, here's a friendly ska beef. Lee Scratch Perry, famous Jamaican producer, produced Bob Marley, probably invented the concept of dub, or if he didn't invent it, he was a very, very, very significant significant influence in that. Also a very significant influence in roots reggae sound and also reggae in general. He had a friendly rivalry with 90 The Observer. They were contemporaries and friends, but they would take shots at each other in the music, not to actually hurt each other's feelings, but to just be fun, you know, kind of like, you know, ragging on your buddies. 90 The Observer famously had, I think, three fingers on one hand. I don't remember if it's three or four fingers on one hand because he lost it in an industrial accident. So to you know, poke the ribs of his friend, Lee Scratch Perry, along with Charlie Ace, released a song called Cow Thief Skank. And so the story of the song is that 90, instead of losing his fingers in an industrial accident, was trying to rob somebody's house and tried to steal their cow, but the cow bit off the fingers. So this song is important because, you know, it's one of the first beef tracks, but it's not really a beef because they were friends. But there are other Jamaican beef tracks. But also it's very important because it very well may be the very first existence of sampling ever or remixing ever. And here's why. Cow Thief Skank is not one song, but it's actually three songs that Lee Scratch Perry cut and put back together. You almost definitely cannot find any other Jamaican record to cut up a song and put it back together as a new song anywhere. And you most likely cannot find that anywhere, at least in Western music. So this song may very well be the first existence of sampling or remix or however you want to define it. So this is Cow Thief Skank by Lee Scratch Perry and Charlie Ace. Here in the town.
Lord God, my stamp, beef cup in my teeth, you cold. Dinah, light the lamp. Pass the chosen, give me the man, hurry. In my teeth for one cold. Rotted, but no more casting that. But then I did a master him, chef of the boy, two fingers. Beam black and white coat. Dinah, pass me my shit, gimme. Make a chop off him hand.
Cow Thief Skank.
From foul to good, from good to cold. When I chew with that boy, I'm going to get what I don't get. Oh. Look, Cassin. Go on like you are real. And I man know say so you don't stop ring coattail. But the next time you go to jail, me tell you something, you're not going to get no bail. And you will be the one who to take out the peel.
Coattail scam.
I tell I about the shitty peel.
Cow Thief Skank.
But a Batman style, you know.
I go out like you wild. Come from Lucy, I go out like you a boost, eh?
Come at Kingston, say I go kill some.
Track where?
What are we, boy?
Cow Thief Skank.
Oh.
What can I say? Go back to Lucy.
Ah.
Now, why you pop no style for me, no more casting? And like I say, you still a ring coat deal. Mocassin!
All right, we're back. We spent so much time on this episode not talking about punk rock. Let's talk about a band that is unequivocally punk rock. So GBH, Grievous Bodily Harm, they have announced a new album called Momentum. It's out on November 17th of this year on Hellcat Records, one of the few Hellcat Records releases that comes out every year. So the title track, which is of course called Momentum, you can go find and stream on Punk News right now, along with the cover art and the 12 song track listing. So it's, you know, if you're tired of listening to John talk about Taylor Swift, you can totally go check out the new GBH stuff, which I don't know, I just want to like just chat about them just for a minute. For, I mean, just a couple things that popped into my head here. The one, I was going to come in and say, like, make some comment about, like, oh, isn't it great that they're not only are they putting out a record, but they're putting out a record on Hellcat, which is really just Epitaph, which means it's going to have, you know, a little bit of beef behind the promotion of it. Like, that's great for a band, you know, of their age to get that kind of promotional push. And then I realized, looking at the old Wikipedia here, that they had a Hellcat record that came out in 2010. So it is, which is actually one that Lars Fredriksson of Rancid produced. So,
is that called like Piss and Vinegar, that album or something?
It's called Perfume and Piss. Yeah. So there you go. Anyways, though, but I guess my point still stands. It's cool to see GBH not only putting out a record, but putting out a record on Hellcat. I think that's. That's a nice use of Hellcat's, you know, brand and Epitaph's money, I guess, is to do that. And then just, I just wanted to, like, you know, I feel like for how long this band has been around and for how many of, like, the original members are more or less involved in it, we never talk about GBH. Like, we as in, like, the general punk news universe. Especially compared to a lot of other bands from that era. And I don't know if it's like we just have this like blind spot when it comes to like UK 82 stuff, or if there's something about this band in particular that we don't talk about them. I mean, we don't talk about the site. I'm going to say the site in general. Like, you know, no one's talking about like Discharge or the Exploited all that much either, right? So
why is this, John? Discharge?
They're probably the most spoken about of that era, but like, you know,
I wouldn't put Discharge.
I feel like any member of the Clash could sneeze and we'd probably cover it. And then you have your you know,
stuff
from after that era. But yeah, what is it about UK 82 that we don't talk about?
Here's your answer. UK 82 is cool. However, UK 82 is like the third wave of UK punk rock. So people often fixate on the very first stuff. I do too myself because it's often the most interesting. GBH, UK Subs, Discharge, but I wouldn't call Discharge UK 82. They're D-beat, obviously. You know, and I actually wouldn't put Discharge in that group at all. But, you know, GBH and, you know, UK Subs and all those kind of guys, it's basically the first Clash album or the first Coxbar album or the first Stiff Little Fingers album taken to its most extreme. And it's cool, but those bands, you know, plugged along and never broke up. So there's no mystery there. If you want to go see GBH, you can go see them. If you don't see them this time, you'll see them next year. And I'm not dissing GBH because GBH is cool. City Baby Attack by Rats is a classic. But people will never see The Clash, so they fixate on them. Plus, you know, The Clash were probably a little bit more experimental than GBH. They set the standard and they blew it out of the water. Sex Pistols, one album, you'll never get to see the Sex – well, actually, you might get to see the Sex Pistols. But, you know, you'll never get to see the Sex Pistols do anything – other than their first album. But then also, people also gravitate towards stuff from the 90s because that's when they were coming of age, at least a lot of our listeners and readers. So that's why they fixate on like Jawbreaker or Hot Water Music and the earliest stuff. And that's why, unfortunately, like, you know, GBH, UK Subs, I'm trying to think about, you know, even the Addicts, or like Becky Bondage, Vice Squad, Exploited, all those guys. That's why they get overlooked, because they never really broke up. They're always on tour. They got lots of albums. They're cool, but they haven't radically changed their sound. And they were too late for the first wave and too early for the, I guess, contemporary wave, if that's how you want to describe it. And that's why they get overlooked. And we should give them a little bit more props, because they're cool bands. They really do believe in what they're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be putting out albums. So we could do a better job at doing that. And if you are a listener or a reader and you want to be the UK 82 guy at Punk News and post stuff about that, send me an email, johng@punknews.org. We're always looking for good hands to help out on the ship.
I could be wrong, but weren't DBH like one of the first like kind of crossover band? Or am I?
They did have a heavy metal phase after their first two albums. That's like 86, 87. So that's right around the same. And actually, you're right. That's interesting, because there's not a whole lot of UK crossover bands. Crossover is usually an American thing. Corrosion of Conformity, DRI, EHG, those kind of bands. You don't see that often on UK bands. However, the thing with GBH is they kind of stopped being crossover and kind of went back to UK 82 when the crossover thing died. People forget that Discharge had a crossover record too.
Well, no, I think even City Baby Attack by Rats has a lot of kind of crossover elements.
You think?
Yeah, it's definitely got some metal influence on it. I don't know. I
feel like we're gonna get a letter from who's our boy there? Liverpool Neil. Write us a letter about GBH. We should just like spend most of the rest of the show just like soliciting our usual letter people to do things.
I'm gonna see them in all right, 18 so, days.
Cool. So I guess there's one more thing that that John put on our docket here, and we'll get through it quickly because I don't care. So that's that. Prophets of Rage have released a video for the song Radical Eyes. The track's going to be featured on their upcoming self-titled album that's coming out on September 15th, 2017. It follows the EP they released last year, which was called The Party's Over. You can find the video over at Punk.
Boy, was that right
now? John, why did you make me listen to this?
Two reasons. First of all, Chuck D, an amazing, one of the greatest MCs of all time. But man, he's just been gone on into pun overload. The angle behind this song is the word radicalized sounds like radical eyes. So Chuck D finds that extremely interesting for some reason, and half the song is him going, radicalized, 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 radical eyes. It's like, that's not that interesting. And Chuck D, you are amazing, but lay off the puns, man. But here's the point why I brought this up, and is there a point where Prophets of Rage just cast it in and say, like, it's not happening? Because this track is not terrible. This track is okay. However, is this track better than Chuck D and Public Enemy? The answer is not really. And actually, it's like kind of worse. Like, it's a funky groove that Chuck D can rap to. But he has more bombastic stuff in Public Enemy. Tom Morello, does he need Chuck D? Or I don't feel like Tom Morello's skills are being put to use, because with Chuck D's voice and cadence, he has to play in a very slow or medium-paced, simple style, which just does not make songs that interesting. I'm not a huge Zach De La Rocha fan. However, from a pure physical standpoint, Zach De La Rocha's voice is excellent at cutting through the sound of Tom Morello's guitar, just the way it sounds. So Tom Morello's able to play very fast and complex and energetically, so those two work off against each other. Chuck D's got a different voice. He's got a different cadence. So all these songs are mid-tempo, which makes them just not that interesting. So the point being is they don't really need each other. So why are they doing this? And also, is there a point where they should just cash in the chips and say, why are they trying to make Prophets of Rage happen? It's not happening, it seems like. So why? You know, are they just too embarrassed? Are they trying to make it happen? Or is it because they are selling tickets, they don't seem to realize that it's not happening and that this is just not that great?
I mean, I thought we determined long ago that kind of the entirety of this project seemed a bit unnecessary. So, I mean, picking apart different pieces and saying they're unnecessary, I don't know. I feel like, it just doesn't seem like Prophets of Rage as a whole needs to really be anything, because I don't know. Yeah, they've put out some like interesting stuff just on a musicianship, just from a musicianship standpoint, but I feel like for the most part, Prophets of Rage is just kind of, it feels a bit weak as a whole.
I just sort of resent the fact that it seems like it feels like this band made themselves, like they made themselves exist because they assumed that the world was going to need them, but they're not, like, we don't we didn't need Prophets of Rage to like show up and expose to everyone that hey, guess what, the Trump era is very problematic. Like, no, that's really blatantly obvious that we don't need them to like expose these issues to the kids because they wouldn't have heard about them otherwise. Like, the issues are on the front page of every paper, and they're just completely daily. Blatant. Like, they're daily. Like, we're in this like nonstop crush of just like political, it's a good word for like a big messy fucking disaster. Like a big messy fucking disaster. Yeah, sure. I'm trying to get through the rest of my life without using the dumpster fire reference ever again, because the internet has decided that
played out.
But like we're in that sort of scenario, and it feels different than when Rage was around, because even a lot of the American stuff that Rage would have been singing about, right? It felt like it was, you know, if you were complacent, you weren't thinking about those things. So, you know, the whole going after, say, like neoliberalism and what that meant, and, you know, what that meant from a foreign policy standpoint and everything else, like you could just be happily sort of bumbling through your life and you would not have encountered those things. Especially not with like rock bands on the radio, but Rage Against the Machine could bridge that and expose people that were in pop, that like were just like interested in, you know, popular music to things that they would not have normally thought about. Things that were probably like really obvious stuff to, you know, folks that were on, say, that were politically engaged, right? But for the average person that was, you know, sitting around listening to fucking Limp Bizkit or whatever, right? Like it was a huge deal to have Rage Against the Machine bring up those topics. I don't feel like we have that disconnect right now. Like people aren't just like happily living their life while Trump and co go around and do a bunch of horrible shit. Like we're aware of that. Like it doesn't need a rock band to go and to heroically bridge that issue, which isn't to say that like people shouldn't sing songs about it. Like, I'm totally okay with, you know, Jello and co doing their Nazi Trump's fuck off song. Like, I'm totally okay with Propaganda releasing songs about this. It's not that it's that Prophets of Rage seemed to like ride in on a white horse and was like, uh-oh, looks like we're needed. Don't worry, America. We'll get the band back together best we could so that we can, you know, we can rage these guys out of office. And I was like, ugh, it's not working for me, John. It's not working.
It ain't working for them either. I hate
All right. So are we gonna play one more song and then get out of here?
Let's kick it.
Yeah.
Sean, Sean.
Yeah. So I just released. I just submitted a review for a band called Idols, and I'd been sitting on this review for a while. I don't know why I didn't review it sooner. It came out close to the beginning of this year. But fantastic album called Brutalism. That they released every song on. There's incredible British band. Lot of, you know, power behind their sound. So I'm going to play a song off of that album. And I think I'm going to play the opener. I'm going to play Heel/Heel, spelled in two different ways. So this is Heel/Heel by Idols.
To move into a bogus home, I'm making a list of everything I own. I'm riding to the amber setting sun, marching to the beat of someone's drum. I'm done. To move into a bovis home, I make a list of everything I own. I'm riding to the amber setting sign, marching to the beat of someone's drum. I'm done.
All right, we're back. That is the end of this show. If you want to get email us, you can do it at podcast@punknews.org. We will see you all next week. Except for maybe me if I die horribly, but, you know, probably.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.